Hello and welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychologies Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy, or UKCP for short. I'm Susie Walker and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychologies. Each month on Talking Therapies, we will be talking to a UKCP therapist about a range of topics. In this episode, we'll be talking about money and its impact on relationships.
Because of the money taboo, and because we don't have enough of a self-awareness around what money means to us, it isn't discussed ahead of making a commitment to each other. And then we end up sharing our lives where money transactions are inevitable. They're daily, they're weekly, they're monthly. And so all these ample chances for conflict to emerge. And we start to see we have very different ideas about earning money, about allocating money, sharing money.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Kelly Hearn. After finishing her MBA at Columbia Business School in New York, Kelly spent two decades of her professional career working in investment management, where the language of money was ever present. She then decided to change her career path and retrain as a psychotherapist, where she noticed an absence of consideration and discussion about money. Kelly's work has been featured in Psychologies magazine, and she's developed and run group workshops on the psychology of money, where she and her colleagues work with people's emotional relationship with money. Shortly, Kelly will be talking to Matt Nichols from the UK Council for Psychotherapy to find out why money is still taboo in society. But first, here are some comments about money and relationships from people we spoke to on the street.
I definitely think there is a taboo about discussing kind of finances and money and such with your partner. I think it is an awkward conversation to say, for example, I'm sorry I don't have the money to go out tonight or whatever. I definitely think it's an awkward conversation, but I think it is one that needs to be had.
I think what's hard about talking about finances is it's an area that you can be shown as vulnerable. Certainly, we have at the start of a relationship we want to look robust and sort of present a very strong, solid image of ourselves. So not being able to pay for something or being in financial difficulty is hard.
It's also not just about how much both parties are earning. There's also that thing of who has a property, who doesn't, who has inheritance money, who doesn't, and that can cause a bit of a rift between two people that can be quite uncomfortable.
I regularly have conversations with my partner about money, actually. We both know how much we both earn, although I've forgotten.
For me, no. I'm quite open with my partner. We talk back and forth about our finances. But as a general, I probably would say yes. I know my brother and his partner, they don't discuss it at all for some reason.
I do talk to my partner about money because I like honesty and being transparent about these things.
The advice I would give to someone experiencing conflict in their relationship relating to money would probably be just to be completely honest and open about it. Depending on what the issue is, if it's, oh, well, you spend more than you should, then you should talk about it. Maybe say, you know, why you can't spend that amount, if it's because you're feeling a bit upset that they earn more than you, or vice versa, or whatever. You just need to be more open about it. You need to break down the barrier so that actually becomes something that's really easy to discuss.
Did you know that money worries are the leading cause of relationship breakdown? A poll of over 2,000 British adults by legal firm Slater and Gordon found that over a third of adults thought financial pressures were the biggest issue facing their marriage, while a fifth said most of their arguments were about money. With money being such a significant issue in marriages, why aren't more people talking about it?
Kelly, thank you for joining us this morning to talk about money and relationships.
Thanks very much for having me, Matt, and for making the time for this important topic.
Yeah, I'd like to start asking about, is there a taboo surrounding money and relationships?
Yeah, let's first define what we're talking about, this taboo, because there really is one. In fact, I've seen some recent research that suggests that money is the biggest topic that individuals fear talking about. So they're more fearful of talking about money than even the other big taboos, sex and death, right? And it's important to note that this taboo isn't new. Freud himself commented over a century ago that money matters are treated by civilized people in the same way we treat sexual matters. So I believe he used the words inconsistency, prudishness and hypocrisy. So we're quite squeamish and fearful of talking about money matters. And it's also interesting to note it goes across the socioeconomic groups. So whether we're talking about families in poverty, struggling to make ends meet, or even all the way up to the wealthiest and even richest families.
And why do you have such an interest in the taboo nature of money?
Well, it comes from working in two very different fields. So I spent the first half of my career in financial services, and it's fair to say the language of money was very present there. And when we look at, as investment managers, valuing companies, we look at how much they earn, and then based on how much they earn, we value them. And that same ideology kind of trickles down to how people value themselves. So there's this idea, if say there's a portfolio manager and her investments are making money, she can feel kind of on top of the world, feel really good about herself. Mm-hmm. And if the markets aren't behaving and she's losing money, she can feel like a complete loser. So money becomes this shorthand for self-worth, quite unfortunately. And there becomes this focus on money, but not so much on other areas, other determinants of value. So that was the experience in financial services. And then I found when I retrained in psychotherapy, there was ample discussion, questions of meaning and purpose and values and all of the emotions linked to that, but almost a complete absence of money talk. So if we wanted to discuss things like fees or covering our costs, that type of discussion was very delicate. It didn't seem as welcome. And of course, I think that's quite common in the caring industries, where there's a lot of emphasis on doing good, which is wonderful. But sometimes we exclude conversation about, can I expect to be paid fairly for this work? I don't think it's limited to the caring industries. I see it a lot also in the creative industries, where there's the archetype of the starving artist, which is quite romanticized. And if someone wants to, you know, make a commercial success of their art, they can be seen as a sellout, something like that. So my interest is in kind of looking at these two very different positions in money and integrating them. And then also, as a psychotherapist, of course, what we want to do is bring a lot of the unconscious into consciousness to build self-awareness. And I think money's complicated because we all ascribe very different meanings, very different emotions to money, and often this is in the unconscious. And so the work in psychotherapy is about building that self-awareness. What does money mean to me? What does money mean to you? And how does it show up in our lives?
And I suppose that leads us nicely into, why is money such a common source of conflict in relationships and for couples?
Lots of reasons here. So one, I would say, because of the money taboo and because we don't have enough of a self-awareness around what money means to us, it isn't discussed ahead of making a commitment to each other. And then we end up sharing our lives where money transactions are inevitable. They're daily, they're weekly, they're monthly. And so all these ample chances for conflict to emerge. And we start to see we have very different ideas about earning money, about allocating money, sharing money. So not a lot of awareness about our own histories with money, and then plenty of opportunities to disagree. And it's very easy then to pigeonhole one or the other into the role of the spender or the saver. And those are the kind of nice euphemisms for other terms that can be the, you know, the reckless one, the one who wants to spend a lot, or the miserly or cheap one. And so we pigeonhole ourselves into these positions.
And does the conflict always come from money, though, or is it a trigger into other sources?
Well, the question I usually get is it always just about the money? And I think that's too simplistic. And if we just focus on the economic transaction, we miss all of the psychology underneath. And so I'll pull up a clinical example here, and first just give the caveat that when I use clinical examples, they've been anonymized, key details changed. In fact, most, if not all, of these are composites. And I just want to make that really clear, because confidentiality is obviously key in psychotherapy. But I'll present a case study of an individual who, actually it was a couple, and they came and there was an ongoing conflict around a secret spending habit she had. And so he would find receipts, he would find shopping bags in the back of the wardrobe, and this was an ongoing source of conflict for them. So when they showed up in the consulting room, we unpacked this a bit, and we saw it wasn't that either of them thought she shouldn't spend. They agreed she was the primary earner for the family. She should be able to buy herself nice things. It was the secrecy of it. It was the frequency of it and what was behind that. And so we went a bit further. And what we found is this money, this spend, was symptomatic of both partners being pretty unhappy in their arrangement. So as I mentioned, she was the primary earner. He had decided to work from home as a consultant and took charge of the majority of the house care and child care. And even though they had gone into that very consciously, he said he was feeling pretty emasculated by it. And he was a bit embarrassed and felt a bit of shame in admitting that because, you know, showing up at the school gates, being the only father, there was some pressure from outside family members, parents who didn't necessarily agree with this arrangement, showing up with former colleagues who referred to him as the house husband. He just had to admit that he was feeling pretty emasculated. Now, they hadn't naturally talked about that so openly, so she picked up on it a bit, and the spending, the hidden spending, was a way to try to hide the disparity in incomes pretty unsuccessfully, but that's a little bit behind it. And then also what came out was that she also was not particularly happy with the arrangement. There was enormous sadness, there was enormous guilt. And when we could really talk about the arrangement that they had co-created and the tinkers that maybe they needed to put in place, that was a much richer conversation than just focusing on the money or the transaction. So, as I said, often much more about psychology than the economics.
So we've talked a little bit, Kelly, about the taboo, but why is there a taboo? Why is money so difficult for us to talk about?
I think there's an awful lot of fear involved, fear around not enough, never enough. And then that cuts straight to the core of self-worth. It's not just, is there enough money? It's, am I enough? So really, money cuts straight to core feelings of self-esteem and self-worth. And as I mentioned, that's across the socioeconomic spectrum. So in, say, poorer families where they really struggle to make ends meet, there's a real shame around that. And money conversations can be very stressful. And so things that aren't talked about, particularly if there's children involved and they want to shield the children from these stressors. But at the other end of the economic spectrum, wealthy or even rich families, there's first the idea that talking about money is gauche, or at the very least impolite, so there's that. But believe it or not, there's still these feelings of not enough, never enough. And perhaps the concerns are different. They're not worrying about paying the electricity bills, but they're different concerns. Is there going to be enough for retirement? Is there going to be enough to provide for my children? So still those same feelings of, am I enough? And often in wealthier families too, there's the consideration of comparing oneself to previous generations. So there's been success in the past. How do I stack up next to that? And a real guilt or a real shame if we're not able to. But for the vast majority of us in the middle, say the working and middle classes, I think there's that feature of comparing ourselves. And it used to be keeping up with the Joneses, which was hard enough, but now we have keeping up with the Kardashians. And just we're full of opportunities for negative comparisons that are pretty unhelpful for our self-esteem and self-worth. And so thus the silence, because these things are difficult to talk about. I would add one practical consideration, which is we don't really have a formal education system around personal finance. So a lot of individuals feel that they lack the knowledge or the language to speak about their finances, and they just stay quiet because they don't want to appear ignorant. So those are some of the ideas.
So we sort of need to encourage more of an open conversation then around money to...
Absolutely, absolutely, particularly as cultural norms shift. So in the past, it was, you know, back in the 50s, there was traditionally the single earner, and it was quite clear what the expectations were, what the norms were. Now, not everyone was happy under those circumstances, but as things shift and we have enormous freedom to kind of write our own stories, to create our own dynamic, our own relationships, with that freedom comes a responsibility, which is talking about it, getting really clear what's important to us, what's important to our partners, and putting in place a system that works for us. So enormous freedom, but with that comes the responsibility and a real need to overcome this taboo and address these subjects head on.
Kelly, you mentioned there talking about keeping up with the Kardashians, and it made me think about social media and that pressure.
Absolutely.
And the representation. And does that come up a lot in your work as well?
Absolutely. And I think we've all seen research and heard about the impact that social media has had, particularly on adolescent girls who are constantly kind of comparing themselves to what friends and the Kardashians and others are doing. So it does come into play. And it's just increases the number of negative comparisons we can do. So absolutely. In fact, when we talk about taking care of our mental health and ways to not get so caught up in that, turning off social media is one recommendation. Another one is a kind of gratitude practice. Instead of focusing on what we don't have, what others have, which is that unfavorable comparison, is to kind of scan, well, what am I feeling pretty good about in my life? What can I feel proud about? Where am I comfortable? What do I have? And again, that's not something that gets as much time as some of these negative comparisons sometimes.
How can past experiences with money affect our relationships now? How can that have an impact?
Okay. I think I'll take a step back from that and rephrase the question a little bit and say, how do our past experiences with money affect our own personal current relationship with money? And then how does that show up in our romantic relationships? Because, of course, our past experiences with money do impact our current thinking, the same way that our earliest experiences with intimacy and romantic relationships inform, you know, what we saw in our family of origin or didn't, informs how we start to show up in our adult lives. The same is true with our relationships with money. So when I work with clients, I'll help them explore what these past experiences are and help them unearth what I call their money story, right? So I might ask a client, what's your first memory of money? And here the answers come up with very informative experiences. So one client mentioned remembering very vividly that at the age of 8 or 9, he was asked to help his mom go to the corner store and pick up some basics. And on the return, he lost the few coins change. And it was met with such despair on his mother's part, absolute tears. And when this individual recalled this experience, you could still see how emotive it was. And when we went through and looked at other experiences, you could start to piece together a story, a belief that money is hard to come by, that it needs to be guarded, even hoarded, and that spending on oneself is just not something that's done. So even though this individual, it's 30 years later and he's very comfortably covering his costs and savings in the bank, he still is loath to spend on himself. Now, that's a very different money story than his fiance had, her upbringing, where she came from a family that was quite bohemian. There were actor parents who were reasonably successful. So sometimes there was money flowing if one or both parents was in a show, and they celebrated that money. They went on trips, they went out to restaurants, and then times would change and maybe one or both parents wasn't in a show and money was a little tighter and they reined in their spend. But there was never that belief that money was scarce. There was always this belief that it would ebb and flow. And so understandably, her relationship with money was very different. Now, what brought them into the consulting room was premarital counseling, and they're deciding on a wedding. Okay, well, perhaps understandably, the gentleman in question doesn't think spending on a large celebration is a good use of money. He'd rather put it down to a down payment. And this was deeply hurtful for her. This is a woman who associated money with celebration and love and ritual and commitment, and to not allow that for their marriage was deeply hurtful for her. So that's just an example, perhaps a bit of a long-winded one, of how two very different experiences with money early on formed two very different personal relationships that then came into a couple and how they negotiate those differences.
And that obviously caused the clash or the the questioning around at that point.
It did, and it brought them into therapy, and it was wonderful because it wasn't just the question of the wedding then. It brought up the much bigger question of how do we want to earn money? How do we want to share money? How do we want to spend money in a way that's aligned with our values and not just a legacy of upbringing or previous experiences that are, you know, in this case, outdated.
So how can money affect the balance of power in a relationship, Kelly?
Sure. Well, I think it's important to acknowledge that money is one lever of power, of course. And if there's a real disparity between earnings, one person is earning considerably more than the other, then that can lead to a power imbalance. It need not, but it can, especially if the higher earner is using that position to exert more influence or more control about how the money is allocated. I think it's important to acknowledge that there's other things we bring to the relationship that are other power levers, the non-monetary ones. So, for instance, relational influence. There could be a partner who has stronger relationships with the children or extended family members or the community, and that status in the family and in the community is really important. And there's a lot of hard work that goes into that. And the person who's doing that hard work needs to be valued for it and feel like their contribution matters. There's other levers of power. It can be education levels. It can be prestige at work, which can be linked to money, but isn't always, because there's an awful lot of meaningful work that isn't particularly well paid. There's creativity. There's all sorts of different qualities and forms of work and power that can and should be valued in the relationship above and beyond financial considerations. Then I think there's the question of how do we pool the money and allocate and share the money that feels, if not entirely equal, then at least fair. And that's a really important question, and there's no one formula here. What works for one couple might not necessarily work for another. So I'll give an example where, say, there's one partner who earns considerably more than the other. One approach would be to pool both incomes and split it equally. So sounds equal, yeah? But is it fair for the one who's contributing considerably more than the other? Not for me to answer. That's for the couple to come to terms with. Another approach might be where there's that income disparity. We both contribute the same amount to a central account to cover shared expenses, and we keep the remains separately. Again, many people might view that as equal. We're contributing the same. But what happens if one partner's left with little to nothing after pooling their contribution and the other has plenty of spending money? Does that set up some resentment? So again, not being too wedded to one formula or another, but rather exploring in your relationship what type of pooling and allocation of resources makes sense for you both, and importantly, keeping a firm eye on the non-monetary contributions to the couple. Because the power imbalances kick in when one or both partners feels like their full contribution to the couple isn't valued, isn't seen, isn't valued, isn't recognized. And if both feel that these things are happening, then we don't need to worry too much about, you know, an income disparity, because it's been acknowledged, as well as the other non-monetary contributions.
This feels slightly disingenuous asking this, because there's probably no one piece of advice that you'd give, but what advice do you give to couples to have more open conversations about money? How do you encourage that?
Yeah, I guess the first thing I'd say is do it early and often. Acknowledging that money's difficult to talk about, but essential. And so the couples I know who have the easiest relationships with money, they've literally been talking about this since the first date and splitting the bill, which when you think about it, it opens up so many different...
Going right back to the beginning, right.
So early and often. Also, I'd say try to have a little bit of openness and curiosity and fun and play around this. It doesn't need to be so serious, thought of as homework or housework. And so, again, we don't want to get too caught up in the specific transactions and the specific arguments. Let's take a step back and view this as an opportunity to build awareness about ourselves, about our partners. And a great way of doing that is organizing something like a money date, where you can, again, not at the end of the day when everyone's tired and you're just trying to figure out who's going to pay what bill when, but to allocate some time to sit down together, have a favorite cup of tea or a glass of wine, or maybe during a walk in the park, and start to get curious about each individual's money story. So I talked about the work with a client, the same type of thing. What is your earliest memory of money? Do you have other memories of money you could share with me? And if these were chapters in a book, what might the title of that book be? So each individual getting a better sense of what their money story is, and learning about the other in the process. So that's past, and then focusing on the present. Okay, knowing that conditioning. How do we want to earn today? How do we want to share our resources? How do we want to allocate our resources? Asking questions like, how important is money to you? What does money mean to you today? How much is enough? Mm-hmm. So lots of questions to build awareness about both the past, about the present, about the future. And there's numerous tools for this. If you do a simple Google search on couples and money questions, they'll come up with loads of lists. But also I'm thinking we can probably post something. I can contribute some of the tools I provide for clients to facilitate just a money date where people can learn about themselves and each other.
Yeah, and we'll be trying to put some of those resources on our website as well to help people encourage those open conversations.
Even in my social circle, I asked around at the weekend just in preparation for this, and the number of friends who I consider they have very strong relationships, but money doesn't come up. Money doesn't come up. Mm. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But it doesn't have to be one big serious conversation. Yeah. I guess that's what I'm saying. It's, can we have an ongoing dialogue about this? And how do we ensure that the dialogue continues?
And obviously, Kelly, we're sat here, you're a psychotherapist. How can psychotherapy help a couple who may be struggling with money and their relationship and that?
Sure. First, I'd say that we find that couples come into psychotherapy in periods of transition. So I mentioned pre-marriage or pre-commitment is a time people come in, or pre-becoming parents for the first time, or major job transitions. And it can be a really useful space to open up all the logistical and emotional considerations and make sure that everyone's really clear about their feelings, their thoughts, and what they're committing to, because that clarity can be really kind and supportive. Now, fair to say that most of the time, by the time a couple ends up in the consulting room, we're beyond that. It's not preemptive. Yeah. They can be pretty mired in conflict and pretty stuck and entrenched in their positions. And oftentimes it's about proving the other person wrong or changing the other person. And one thing we try to do in psychotherapy is to turn the lens and say, all right, if we stop focusing on how wrong the other person is, and we instead turn that lens to the self and say, what am I doing that might be contributing to the situation? How am I showing up that might create a bit more stress and be adding to the problem? So the first protocol, I think, is building awareness of self and how we're contributing to the conflict or contributing to the problem. And then it's a space to open up stories we might be telling ourselves about the others. What else might be going on for your partner? And start to help construct the story behind it, the emotions behind it, the needs behind your partner's behavior. So it's really about building awareness of self, building awareness of your partner, and how do you show up in a way and communicate in a way that can alleviate conflict rather than exacerbate it. Right. So often it's not just a question about what we're arguing about, it's how we're arguing about it. And with these really emotive topics, we don't necessarily bring our calmest, coolest mind to the conversation. We can be emotionally hijacked and be quite combative. So how do we cool things down a bit and engage in a way that is really sitting in our vulnerability, really sitting in the emotions beneath the conflict and saying, this is how I feel. And this is what could make it better. So often people think couple therapy is about fixing what's wrong in a relationship, and certainly there is attention given to that. But we also like to create enough space to remind ourselves what's going right, the positives of the relationship. So giving time and space for the love story and to the successes that the relationship has had, and building on those successes and those positive aspects, because that connection, it serves as the glue that helps the couple weather conflict and difference. And then creating time and space for differences, because again, differences can cause conflict. But what we forget sometimes is that what initially attracted us to the person was the difference that was exciting or attractive. And those same exciting, attractive differences can become quite annoying when we live with this person on a daily basis. So providing the time to take a step back and remind ourselves the benefit of those differences and creating enough space in the couple to tolerate those differences. So just dealing with that natural tension that arises in relationship, being really open about it and addressing how we can make it work for both partners.
Kelly, this has been a fascinating topic. It's such an enormous area to cover. And what I've taken personally for my relationship is the earlier I can have a conversation about money, it stops it coming up later. Does that make sense?
Sort of. Absolutely. The preemptive approach.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And even though I've been in a relationship for quite some time, let's leave it at that, but we've never really talked about money in that way. And I wouldn't want it to become a problem later down the line.
Sure.
So actually now you've really encouraged me to reflect on that. And as we mentioned, we'll try and put some resources on the website to help facilitate that conversation that can stop things becoming a crisis point later.
Absolutely. I think an ongoing conversation is essential, particularly now that there are no cultural norms about how we accumulate money and share money and spend money in a couple. So the responsibility is on our shoulders to create the arrangement that works for us and have some fun with it. Again, it's about self-exploration, self-awareness, getting to know your partner better, building intimacy, not necessarily about who's going to pay the electricity bill this month.
Kelly, thank you so much. And as we often say, if you want to find a therapist, we have links on our website. And we will be putting some more resources on our website to help people have those conversations about money. Kelly,
super.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Kelly Hearn talking to Matt Nichols from the UK Council for Psychotherapy. If, after listening to that, you feel you could benefit from some talking time from a psychotherapist, then go to the Find a Therapist section of the UKCP website and have a look through. The website address is psychotherapy.org.uk and look for the Find a Therapist tab. We'll also be featuring the subject of money and the emotional impact it can have on relationships and psychologies this month, or you can find us online at psychologies.co.uk. We'll be recording a podcast each month for the next year with some of the UKCP's psychotherapists. And remember to like and subscribe to our channel to hear it first and to help others to find us too. So join us again next month. Till then, thank you for listening and take good care of yourselves.